Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 58. We've got a lot to talk about today. Gwent Slam number 2, Gwent Open qualifiers, and since it's patch week, we also have a new single-player event, new cards, balance changes, and more. Later, Mogwai, Merchant, Ash, and Panda join me from Gwent Slam to talk all about casting, all this, and some important news from Josh on this episode of Commander's Horn. My friends, we are back once again with Commander's Horn, a weekly Gwent podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I am joined, as always, by the Midnight Viking, Josh Greyboxer. We spoke today, and you broke a bit of news for me, and let's talk about that news.
Yeah, man. I mean, first of all, for Gwent, it's a really great and exciting time. We had the new patch and the new season launch and everything. Everything is trending up, and Gwent Slam 2 was awesome. I can't wait to talk about that. But on my end, I have had a bit of a time crunch at work, and I'm getting so absolutely slammed that I am going to have to sort of step back a little bit from Gwent and probably play quite a bit more casually. And although some of you would say, "Oh, you're not top 20 pro ladder, you're casual already." The truth is I did play quite a lot, and I really pushed for ranks. And I just don't have the time with the end of the year time crunch at work. So it's very sad for me, McBeard. You know, we had that episode last week where we sort of reflected on everything that we've, been through with Gwent and everything. And I'm going to have to sort of take a short, I guess, podcast hiatus so that Commander's Horn, as always, can bring you the best quality Gwent podcast content. And so we're going to have some subs and some different co-hosts for McBeard coming up, because I will be focusing on my work and planning on being back and stronger than ever in 2018.
Yeah, so that obviously affects the future of the podcast, and this is news. We just talked about this today, Wednesday, November 2nd. So, there is a lot going on right now. I just got back from Gwent Slam, and, we've been trying to organize. It's been tough. It's been tough on my time as well. We talked about it, and I guess the decision is made here that we're going to go to, for now, as far as co-hosting is concerned, a rotating chair. I'll be looking at some guests that'll be on the podcast that'll be a little bit more involved, I guess, as opposed to just having interviews and some like discussions with us. It'll be a bit more involved kind of rotating chair for co-hosting while I guess I sort out kind of how we're going to be doing the podcast. But just want to say that it will not be the same without you. You are not replaceable. And hopefully we can get you back soon.
You got it. And you know what? If I get caught up early, I will try to come back soon.
Of course, there's always going to be room for you on the podcast. And even if it's even if you stop in and you're going to be immortalized, as far as I'm concerned, on this podcast. I had a cool idea. When we do the feedback portion, we get in there, we do the wrap up. It's going to be called Greyboxer's Garrison, where the commandos hang out, and that's where we're going to be talking about. That's where we're going to get into the mailbag. We're going to talk to the community. And every episode, Greyboxer, you're going to be in there. And I'm going to steal a soundbite either from this episode or an episode before this, if you can't yell, where when we talk about the commandos, we're always going to be getting you saying commandos. You're always going to be on the podcast, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, McBeard. And, I'll always be around to give my commandos a shout out,
Right on. So, good time for us to say this episode of Commander's Horn is recorded live on Wednesday, November 2nd. Well, it's not really live. We are recording it. We're recording it live, but we're not live on Twitch as we are at times. And you can find Commander's Horn at www.commandershorn.com. And you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. Send your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at Commander's Horn. If you are looking to find us on Google Play Music, I am currently looking into that. A couple of people actually asked me about that last week, so I am currently checking that out.
Clever. I don't know. I've never even tried that before, but if... The listeners need it. We got to deliver. So, speaking of which, this episode of Commander's Horn is brought to you by our sponsor, Hattori's Dumplum Emporium, where the customer is king. Just kidding. This episode is brought to you by our commandos, our patrons over at patreon.com/commandershorn. Thanks for keeping the mics on and the lights on and keeping the podcast ad-free.
And of course, I am with the Midnight Viking, and we are recording a little bit on the late side, and I can hear your reservation. I can hear your reservation in the yelling of it. And I'll definitely, when I cut in commandos in future podcasts, I'll make sure that it was one that you really belted out there, just so your presence can be felt.
Last week was solid, for sure, yeah. I've got a sleeping 7-year-old approximately 8 feet away in his bedroom.
Yeah, I think the one from the Commander's Horn, the Commander's Roundtable number 3, you nailed that. That one was so good. Anyway, I remember them all. The ones where you say it quietly are also very, very funny. Lots of stuff to talk about, of course. We are in new patch. I mean, we just come off of a pretty exciting weekend with Gwent Slam number 2. We have our Pro Ladder qualifiers for Gwent Open number 2, which will be occurring in November. And we have a brand new patch that just dropped yesterday, Tuesday, on Halloween. Not yesterday. Was it yesterday? Is today the 1st? Have I been saying the 2nd this whole time? I'm crazy.
Yeah,
I'm a crazy person.
Maybe.
Halloween was yesterday. We got a new patch. We got some single-player content. There is lots going on. And apologies for getting the date wrong there. Of course, you're listening to this on Thursday, November 2nd. Get it right, get it right. So let's talk about all that stuff and more Grey Boxer right after this. All right, so Grey Boxer, you had did you have the pleasure of taking in Gwent Slam 2? I was there. I definitely took it in. But how was the viewing experience?
Oh, it was great. It just seems to be getting better and better. In the second time around, it looked like you guys managed to have even more fun, like in general across the entire house, than you did even the first time. And I really appreciated how often everybody is going live, and your stream with Ash and everybody was really great. And I think that all the supporting events and life coach constantly dropping by and showing off his sushi was pretty awesome as well. And that's not even getting into the gameplay, which featured some very human elements, I think, and some also pretty high-end gameplay. So yeah, it was great from a viewer perspective, for sure. Tell us about it from your perspective, Mr. Host.
Yeah, I mean, the human element is always awesome about live LAN events, and we had a really cool LAN client as well. So it was like a special client for Gwent that made sure that there was basically the internet wouldn't, if anything crashed or anything went down, the game would never go down. So the games were really stable, no crashes this time, no problems at all. Although some of the premium animations were really weird. Anything with like a cape, I think, was crazy. Like Ragnarug, Aromancy, Tibor. Like there was like some crazy animations. So that was like a funny thing that was going on. And it was really good. I think that as far as like me and Panda and Mogwai are concerned, and Ash as well, and Game King as well, like anybody who's been there a couple times at this point, super comfortable, getting really used to playing and hanging out, getting very used to casting, the routine, kind of like the demands that it puts on you, being up like out of time zone, being up late, having a lot of fun with everybody. And I gotta say, the stream that we did with Ash, Merchant, and Panda, and Mogwai, and like even some of the pro players that were behind us at some times, it was one of the most fun streams I ever did. And we didn't even play any Gwent. It was just a hangout. It was an IRL stream. Jumped in the ball pit a little bit. We cast from the famous table that Life Coach streams from and the players play on. And it was really just, it was a really special stream for me. Everybody who came out and hung out there and just wanted to chat with us about some of those new card reveals, which were still very mysterious at the time, all but like 4 days ago. This all happened like 4 or 5 days ago at this point. So, it's just, it seems like it's already been like it's a totally different world. Like it was like when Wind Challenger ended in May, it was like a crazy, crazy, crazy time, like a huge event. And then I come back and then all of a sudden it's closed beta into open beta and like everything is different already. So, it's good that we can have a chance to talk about the event. It was really great. Congratulations to Game King. He did defeat Metranos in the finals. How about those finals though, Grey Boxer?
Oh, dude. I mean, the clinching game for me really stuck out to me because I actually had Game King dead to rights in that game with playing a little bit too deep, I thought, in round one, and then just being able to hold out and take it. I thought that was just excellent. And it just seemed more and more like he was able to deny any value from that croc list from Metronos. And it just seemed like that croc list was so intense that I think doing like that middle of the first round pass and sort of giving Metronos sort of a weaker round three, plus Metronos not having the proper weather cards in hand to make stuff happen. I mean, he just dominated them. And I think that you probably agree with me that Game King, it was his time.
Yeah, it absolutely was. Game King reached the semifinals in Gwent Together, which was the one tournament that I actually was participating in. I actually got knocked out by Metronos in that tournament. Oops. And then Game King took on Metronos in Gwent Together and beat him there as well. And then Game King got into the semifinals against Freddy Babes for Gwent Slam 1, was ultimately defeated by Freddy Babes. Game King was ultimately defeated by Mogwai in Gwent Together, and then finally makes it to the finals once again, rematch against Metronos, was playing against a deck who was targeting monsters, got really good draws. Metronos did not get good draws. Game King played it very, very well, just basically couldn't beat. Metronos couldn't break through with his Croc Axeman deck, which was actually very good, and Metronos really using Golden Weather and kind of really punishing anybody who really didn't anticipate that at all, because he ran, I think, between his four decks, had five of the Golden Weathers, two in Bruver, two in Croc, and one in Henselt, Drought, I believe. And he was playing very well. I mean, Metronos, he had an interesting way to the top. He made a mistake in his ban in the quarterfinals, and he, you know, there was some stuff that happened. But Game King isn't without fault. So I think in the finals, Game King got blocked by his own Scorch at one point. Like, it was really close. There was a lot of pressure on these guys, and Game King just made it happen. The games, it seemed like he was struggling at some points, but Game King, he saw the matrix. He mapped it all out. He knew where he was, I think, at any given time. And right at the moment, you can tell right at the moment where he knew he had won, he got a little smile peeks out on his face, and then he seals the deal. Metronos with the forfeit, and then we have it. We have the champion Game King taking home over 5,000 USD on top of crown points as well, and the trophy on top of that. So congrats to Game King winning on home soil in Austria. Everybody was pretty excited there.
Yeah, and a nice soaking to end it all in the pool, right?
Yeah, and then JJ like talks him into jumping into the pool to the point where I think I actually missed the conversation that they were having, but he's like, I'll jump in if you jump in. And then JJ jumps in, he like kind of half cannonballs in, and as soon as Game King realized that JJ wasn't trying to prank him, Game King was like, make sure his phone's not in his pocket, and then he's jumping in as well. So really awesome stuff. There's a video on YouTube. Check out Life Coach's video or YouTube. You should check it out. You see the whole thing there right after the cameras go off for the stream. They jump in the pool. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and that wasn't the only like hilarious human event as well. We saw a lot of people probably watch the Super JJ match where he accidentally scorched himself. I mean, I'm talking day one Gwent accidents can still happen to the best players in the official Gwent tournaments. This is, I mean,
well, actually. I mean, what actually happened, it's funny, in that instance, there were two 10s on the board. He had a Yavin on his board, and there was a 10 on Game King's board, so the Scorch was really for zero. But what actually happened is because the card looks similar, I think, and he was just maybe not paying attention to his click, he actually meant to play Drought in that situation. They're both like bright orange cards, and I think he just misclicked on the card. It wasn't so much the Scorch as an actual misplay, it was actually maybe like just it was more of a mouse misplay from JJ.
There's a couple of times I saw that as well. Just a couple of those happened. And it seems like the deeper into the rounds people go, people just sort of they click faster and faster. And if you're fast-paced anyway, if you've played first-person shooters, those kind of twitch games where you just have to have the really fast reflexes, if you take that to Gwent, you can sometimes misclick, and the game client is what sometimes messes with you, right? Because you know, a lot of times you can watch the replay and it looks like they're hovering over the right card. We see this all the time in the Great Dandelion Show or Gwent's videos. It happens to people everywhere. You're just trying to click fast and you misclick even though the right thing was highlighted.
Yeah, I mean, it just takes a lot of, like, you got to be super, super careful sometimes. It's just, there's like a little bit of lag on the click here and there. But JJ's reaction was priceless. And of course, that actually ended up being a concede not too long after that. It was the only, I mean, it wasn't really, I mean, he got up afterwards as well. Like, it looked like a rage quit. JJ was actually really good humored about the whole thing. He's a good guy to hang out with. He's actually very funny. And, you know, JJ just didn't get through at that point. Game King did take him out. And then went on to take on the finals, to get the finals done. So really cool series, really, really fun to cast. Got to cast a little bit with everybody. I got to cast 2 games with Merchant, a game with Mogwai, and a game with Panda. And I got some games off as well. Merchant and Mogwai cast together. Mogwai and Panda casted together. It was really cool. And I also got to cast with Life Coach for that hilarious show match, Spain versus England. Did you catch that one? It was really funny.
Oh, my God. Oh, the chorts. Oh, I can't believe the restore... The restore prize winning cow into the wild boar of the sea is the meme, like the ultimate meme, because Merchant's across it must have been across from the table, right? Like, you guys are sitting at the competition laptops, correct?
Yeah, they're upstairs. They have 2 laptops, and Cam's pointing at them, and then we're downstairs in like a little alcove the swimming pool. So no, we're looking at the cams.
So Merchant's face is just like getting more and more, like, he cannot believe what's happening to him on the other side with these chorts going insane. It was hilarious. Like, I don't know. Like, I thought it was just beautiful and glorious to see that kind of board. And that's the kind of fun we want to see with the show matches, right?
Yeah, I mean, in an unfortunate coincidence, Merchant queued in with a deck that was hard, basically Mogwai and Panda's deck, like hard countered trebuchets, because like all they wanted to get hit with stuff. And then also the reveal deck kind of countered the consume deck in a way. I can't remember exactly what had happened, but because it's all like a garbled bunch of, it's all like 100 games in my memory. But I do remember that it felt like just unfortunately what Ash and Merchant brought for Team England was just like exactly what Mogwai and Panda needed to see on the other side, just to basically make them very one-sided matchups.
Speaking of 100 games, wasn't Game King playing the pro ladder like the entire time he was at Life Coach's house? Like he partied after he won, but wasn't he still laddering even while everybody else was partying around him? And didn't that sort of pay off?
I don't even think Game King even, you could even say he partied at any point. He basically, I think that if Gwent stopped being a game, he would just cease to exist. He would just like wave goodbye and fade away, like Back to the Future style. Like it would just be
like Iris von Everick.
He would just vaporize. And I think that like, basically if it's not Gwent, he's not there. It's really something. So he went through the quarterfinals and then he went upstairs and he played with Freddy and Andy and Tailbot and Adzikoff were all hanging out. He pushed super, super hard. He ended up, I have conflicting reports on Twitter who actually ended up number one in Pro Ladder. I do believe Adzikoff, with a little bit of time to spare, was able to edge out Game King. But at one point, Game King was number one on the ladder by 5 MMR. An incredible race for the end of the pro season. Adzikoff did end up reclaiming his throne, but Game King at one point, at the very, very end, he tweeted it out. He was number one on the ladder. But the real story, I think, Game King played a ton. But the real story is actually Freddy Babes. Freddy Babes played a lot on Sunday, and he streamed a lot the next day as well. He streamed something like it was just hours, like hours and hours and hours, just grinding and grinding, because he needed to get within the top 40, I believe, because his crown points would carry him the rest of the way. And this actually segues very nicely into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is the Pro Ladder qualifiers for the Gwent Open number 2 in November. So Freddy Babes did get crown points for winning Gwent Slam number 1. He got some. He got 10. So, you know, it's not a lot when you look at the Pro Ladder when the number one person gets like a lot of crown points, whereas, you know,
80, right?
It's 80. It's about 80, right? So Adzikoff got 2 points for competing in 2 Gwent Slams, and then he got 80 to round out and actually end up being the number one qualifier for Gwent Slam. Check out masters.playgwent.com for the full details. I highly encourage you to do that. But basically, Freddy just needed to get into The rank, he just squeezed in there. And he played a lot. Huzzah time is the number one comment in this thread saying he streamed for 11 hours straight, didn't sleep, played like between 48 hours. He just played tons. He actually ended up ranking up with Nilfgaard, which is a faction that he didn't even compete with in the 100 games. He didn't even have 100 games completed when he started that grind, but Nilfgaard is really strong. So he cruised with Nilfgaard. He played a lot with Andy Wind on Sunday, like a lot. Like, we forgot they were there. Like, we were up for a long time. Like, Merchant and Panda and I and Ash and Zeraki was there. He was the admin for the tournament, a member of Fate to Karma. And a couple other people were there as well, hanging out with us. But Freddie was upstairs with Andy playing Pro Ladder up until the point where we actually left, just playing and playing and playing. So he got there. He got in to be the top eight, and your top eight qualifiers for Gwent Open, which is occurring halfway through November. It's going to be on the 18th and 19th of November, and your competitors will be Adzakov, Game King, Tailbot, Hannah-chan, Super JJ, Irohabit, Metranos, and Freddy Babe. So you're familiar with almost all of these players. The only one that has never been seen in a tournament setting at this point is Irohabit. Hannah-chan had a fantastic showing in Gwent Open number one, where he was just narrowly beat by Super JJ. So we know Hannah-chan can play. Irohabit's a bit of a wild card. We've seen Tailbot and Adzakov compete as well in Gwent Slam. So this is we're getting familiar with these players. These are names we recognize. We've seen their stories. We've met them. We've heard from them. And Gwent Open is going to be in this new patch meta. So they got 2 weeks to figure out what's going to be the best. What do you think is going to be the best, Gray Boxer?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Consume?
I think Consume's really good. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I think Consume's pretty good. But
I'm just staring here at this qualifier and looking at Freddie Babe's total pro ladder games at 653, and I'm floored. I can't believe it. Everybody else has over 1,300 games. He has half as many games as a person with the second least as many games, Tailbot, who we've known has been at the top the entire time, and who came in third. And I'm just shocked that he was able to sort of, last minute rush this with probably, I'm sure the Nilfgaard list he was running was is the most refined and top list you could possibly run at the end of a meta which was dominated at the end by Nilfgaard anyway. So I'm completely floored by this, and I think that we should take note of it because he's the only the only guy to have less than 1,000 games, less than 700 games, that's got 47 crown points and is qualified for Open. So, he might have the smoothest, palest baby face around, but he is a serious Gwent player, and that is impressive.
He's efficient with his time, for sure, but he spent a lot of time at the end there. Like, a lot of those games were played at the very end. I don't know if it was like 100 or what, but it was a good amount of those. As far as the tournament's concerned, Freddie Babes achieved the most tournament points. Competing in Gwent Slam is enough to get you 2 points. And he got 10 points, of course, from winning the previous one. So, it was close. It's going to be great to see him. I think when he realized how close he was, he had to go for it, and he went for it, and it was close for him. So, really awesome job by Freddie Babes. Looking forward to seeing all of these people. We'll be live in Poland on the 18th and 19th of November, and don't know what's planned really. I just know that I'll be there. I'll be casting, but there's going to be some stuff ready. We're going to have it's going to be a little bit more interactive. Casting kind of remote from Gamescom before left us very distant from the players. Will not be the case this time around. Everybody will be hanging out.
Yes. All right. That's what I want to see. I'm really excited for these then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. There's going to be definitely much more player interaction and actually there's going to be some conversation with some players as well, and whatever else CD Projekt Red has lined up. And of course, it's going to be the casting team that you have come to love at this point. Hopefully, I hope you have come to love it, everybody.
Yes.
We're always working on that. So there's that. So that's a lot to look forward to. But let's talk about what's happening right now. We are in the, I would guess this is that we call this season three of the pro season three, but generally season three. We got a whole new set of borders. You might call this the Aridin season because the borders are awesome. I got to get myself one of these. The Aridin borders are sweet looking, nice armored kind of like shoulder pads, like a nice Aridin crown. And then, the top player gets that little like kind of Wild Hunt Navigator sort of glowing frosty orb at the hanging off the corner there. Really nice stuff.
And what is it? The long haired, flowy locks of Aridin that you all wanted to have as your avatar is achievable this season as well. And this is Ocean Mud season for sure.
Oh, Ocean Mud is going to probably have a drive to play harder than he's ever played before, because Aridin, if you don't know Ocean Mud, he's a streamer who plays almost exclusively, if not exclusively, Aridin and variations of Aridin decks. Even on his Smurf, like, he'll just play Aridin until he can't play anymore, and then he'll just get on a Smurf and play more Aridin. So I would not be surprised to see Ocean Mud make a solid, solid push on the ranked ladder for this one. And there's lots of cool stuff. New avatars, of course. It's Aridin without his helmet. I thought it was actually Zombie Geralt the first time I saw it, but I think it's Aridin without his helmet, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's pretty boy face Aridin without the helmet and without all the, you know, scars that you leave him with at the spoiler alert end of Witcher 3.
Well, you do fight him. He is the antagonist, so hopefully you're not spoiled too much about that.
Yeah, but kind of predictable.
Kind of predictable. But with this became another little bit of single player action. We got a new event. This event is good right now. Now, Greybox, you haven't had a chance to play it yet, so we're not going to talk too much about it, because I honestly think that some people probably haven't had a chance to get into it, and I don't want to spoil anything, but I will say that this event is very challenging, especially on the expert mode. One of these challenges took me quite some time to get it, and it was so satisfying to beat it. But you get some cool prizes. If you played the Mahaka Male Festival, you can probably have an idea of the kind of rewards that you get for completing it on normal and then expert mode. But when you get a chance, Gray Boxer, you should definitely let me know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, I love the spooky stuff and the, you know, the Seovine, is it Seovine? It's like the celebration of dead people. Mm-hmm. What is it?
Well, this follows the story of Regis the vampire, but in his younger days, when he was, you know, a bloodthirsty vampire, and he was here with his vampire cronies, and he's coming for the townsfolk. So the peasants need to rise up, and they need to actually stop him. So Regis actually being the antagonist was a surprise for me. But the way it plays out, there's a storyline from all three events. There's like a really cool storyline, you know, some characters that you may know and love, and you know, some cool new artwork as well. I think that the artwork is actually, if it's like the Mahaka Male Festival, then the artwork is actually teasing some future cards as well. So we may see some new vampire cards, you might say, because there's some new artwork in there. There's a couple of new, some peasants that look pretty good, and maybe from Crown Thronebreaker. I believe we see the artwork that was shown in one of the teasers for the Lyrian Scythemen. So they're in there as well. So there's lots of cool art to see. And lots of great voice work, of course. It's what you would expect from kind of a single-player Witcher standpoint, but it's very Gwent-y. It's basically two puzzle challenges and then one kind of more traditional Gwent three-round challenge, but there is a massive twist to all of them. You will definitely enjoy it, and you will be challenged for sure, especially by the second event. It's really a tough one.
And one thing I can definitely comment on, even not having seen any of the new cards in the Halloween event, is that they did take some of the cards from the Mahaka Male Festival and put them right into the game in the next patch. So obviously expect them to be tuned for multiplayer, like the Mahaka Male and that sort of thing. But these are probably cards, as you mentioned, that we're going to see in the upcoming patches.
Yeah, and that's a good time to actually talk about kind of the patch that just hit. We got 21 new cards. Many of them were neutral. Each faction got two cards each. So when we do talk about factions in future podcasts, you know, it'll be broken up differently, I think, as a bulk of these were actually neutral cards this time. And a lot of the cards, I think, we're gonna talk kind of in an overarching sort of look at the cards and kind of where we think the meta is going to go. But I want to test a little bit more before we really dig into these new cards. But I think that as far as this package of cards, I don't know, Greybox, if you'll agree with me, but these cards they're strange. There's a strangeness to these cards. I think a lot of people would call them meme cards. I would say that like cards like Wolfsbane and Avalok the Sage, and even maybe the Ale of the Ancestors, as far as gold cards are concerned, are very strange cards. Like, they don't scream, put me in this deck for overpowered experiences. They are more like, find the best way to make me work because I'm a weird card.
Yeah, I think that the new patch is sort of focusing on deck archetypes that exist while supplementing them with kind of single cards to focus your deck on. And, you know, like, it's sort of just strange to see like a card, like a gold card, like Muzzle or something, or, you know, having a matchup that that's going to work in, or, you know, like having cards that don't necessarily work with your archetype. Specifically, I'm talking about a lot of the golds here, like you mentioned. They just kind of fit into a deck and make it better. But you really need them to make your combos work. And so I wonder, like, if that's sort of an understanding of the deck efficiency that we've achieved as Gwent players by this point with a 25 card minimum, that a lot of times, yeah, you're going to get your hand on most of your golds. And if that gold happens to be something you've built your deck around, good on you. It's going to work.
One thing I would like to say about CD Projekt Red, I want to say thanks very much. I actually got the opportunity to reveal one of these cards, and how, I don't know if this was a coincidence, because if it wasn't a coincidence, then they definitely listened to the podcast and they turned this around really fast. But we talked yesterweek, Gray Boxer, we talked about... we were reviewing our year and all the fun stuff that we've had to got to do over the year with Gwent, and we reminisced about being able to reveal the original Milena and Champion of Champions way back when we got our first like new pack of cards for Gwent. And I said, you know, if CD Projekt Red is listening, it'd be really awesome. I think the community can really get behind community reveals. You can kind of do it worldwide, and you can get a lot of people involved. And man, the next day, I was revealing a card, and it was actually really tight for me because I had spent some time on uploading a YouTube video beforehand, and I had getting my bags packed, and I was ready to take off for Vienna. And then I get an email from Paul Berger saying, "Hey, we have a card you can reveal." And everybody's revealing their cards on this day, and I was about to catch a flight, so I had to scramble to get that YouTube video out. I didn't even know what kind of special card it was. The card in question is Crow's Eye. You can check me out, youtube.com/C/McBeard, if you want to catch that video of mine on Crow's Eye. And at the time, I didn't even know if it was an organic card or what it was, but it was actually turned out to be organic and an alchemy card. And, you know, it was just really fun to do that. But I mean, that was a crazy coincidence, I think, right, Gray Boxer? Like, did we just predict the future? What happened?
It was kind of spooky Halloween kind of coincidence, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So but yeah, I think that maybe they listened, huh?
I mean, they may have listened, or it may have just been like, they may have even listened to the podcast and thought, whoa, that's really wild that he just happened to say that when they have that lined up. I don't know what kind of turnaround that is for them. You know, Berger is the leak master, so it could have been really easy. It could have been something they had planned for weeks in advance. So I got to reveal Crow's Eye. I don't think I'll be able to remember everything. I know Merchant got to reveal Muzzle. Swim got to reveal Jermaine of Fox Hollow, although at the time of the reveal, I believe it was just called Peasant Leader, but that's the 8-point silver that spawns the four cows. And you know, there were a lot of reveals around that time as well.
Yeah, that guy's really cool. I think that's one of those cards that just sort of works in the deck archetype. You know, that where you just throw it in. It's a neutral, isn't it?
Yeah.
It kind of works with Yennefer, kind of works with any of those like Marauder buffing type decks. You know, if you play the dwarf and you buff with the I guess you buff with the Mahaka Male now if you want to, or a full moon potion, you can still do that and generate a ton of value. I'll tell you from experience though, I've been playing a good bit of it and you lose to carryover.
Yeah. But also Jermaine works with another very card that's very close to us, of course. He creates a perfect row for what card, Gray Boxer?
Well, Commander's Horn, baby.
Commander's Horn, yeah. He's a good Commander's Horn card. He gives you 5 units on the board. I like Jermaine of Foxhall because it's very, very simple to understand. There's some complicated cards in this patch, but it's just, you know, it's an 8-point card that gives you 4 1-point cards, 12-point card. Easy peasy. Not much to understand. A lot of awesome application with the Kedwini Siege supports, of course. Commander's Horn, of course. And everything you said, of course, creates a row for your Golden Froth Ale as well. And yeah, it's really cool. But yeah, Northern Realms got a new machine and got a new crewman and Ronvid of Small Marsh. Sorry, is that what it is?
Yeah, Ronvid of the Small Marsh.
Yeah, yeah. And so like, there's some cool stuff there. It's you know, Northern Realms gets a little bit of their own carryover. They already have Botchling Lubberkin, but also now Ronvid comes back on top of that. And provides like a permanent crewman, almost like a completely permanent crewman. You can't really get rid of him unless you lock him. So that's pretty cool. Monsters get some Death Wish play with the She-Troll of Vergen and the Slizzard. And I think that the Slizzard is a really good card. I was playing with that today. Now, Gray Boxer, you said that you had some negative experiences playing against Consume. How's it going for you?
Yeah, so Neckers are kind of a thing. And this is something that we've talked to with, you know, the developers about. You know, we've had, fortunately, over our long tenure of talking to developers about this game and having the experiences we've had as podcasters, we've had the opportunity to ask, you know, Rethus and other game developers, why did you make this change? Why did you make that change? And they tell us, you know, and some of those interviews are not able to be put on the podcast because we've told them we would not put them on the podcast. But the content of those interviews is now getting pretty old. And one of the things that they said was they're very careful to balance consume, because consume, when it gets out of hand, is absolutely demoralizing and destructive and can be very intimidating to play against. And I think maybe McBeard, we've sort of hit that point where there's enough consume effects to make Neckers so crazy and to push the Necker Warrior Neckers archetype back to the front, and just constantly consuming and pulling the Neckers and creating more and more and more and you know, buffing them. And even if you get them locked, or if they get petered or Marjo aimed or anything, you know, there's different ways to bring these back. If they get killed, you can slizzard them. I mean, there's a ton of things you can do. And I don't know. It's really weird. I'm in a strange place with it, because I want consume to be good, because consume is one of the most satisfying decks to play. It's one of the most visceral decks to play. But right now, like, I'm having a hard time even getting close to beating it. And they're still abusing Woodland, McBeard, and those poor Harpies.
I mean, it's, now I'm playing the Harpies, though. That's the thing. The consume list that I'm playing, shout out to Sushant. He provided a list with me, a list to me today that just, it was so dominant, this list. And I'll post it. I haven't even really made a video about it yet, but you know, you can check out my VODs on Twitch at McBearded. On top of, I'll probably have a video out eventually about it and maybe put a deck list up. But it was Sushant's list really that I was playing. Ran Neckers, Necker Warriors, Harpies, two Slizzards, and the Griffins, actually. And the Griffins are really like the secret sauce, I think, in that deck, because the Griffins are able to get more Neckers out. You're using Necker Warriors, so like you're carrying over not just one Necker, but multiple Neckers, kind of like old school Monster Nest, like this sucks to play against style. And I think that one of the things, like you were talking about stuff that we talked about before with the devs and stuff, is that they, you know, they take a very careful approach to consume, but they also know the players love the consume mechanic. They loved it, especially when it was just kind of becoming an archetype. So I really think the consume is there. I was beating the snot out of like some spy decks with Nilfgaard, and it was so satisfying because that deck has reigned supreme for so long. And I think that the tempo that you can put out with this deck is really, really something else. And I don't know if this is like early patch hype or this deck is like truly competitive. It felt like criminally good. I felt starting to feel bad at some point for some of my opponents, because you can do really cool stuff. The way you abuse Woodland with this one is you play Woodland, obviously, you get your Foglet out, you get your Fog played, of course, your three Wolves, and then Elder, with the new way that Harpies work. This was changed in the patch. Harpies will now only spawn from your deck if you have a beast destroyed on your side of the board during your turn. So you play Woodland, and then you play Elder to eat the three Wolves, and then all three of your Harpies come out of your deck, and it's an insane amount of points. It's arguably, I wonder if you might even say it's better than it was before. It's just you have to do it in two turns, but it's so good.
Well, if you think about it, it is better for the consume archetype to use Woodland and use it in that way with the Harpies. However, I don't think it's like, say, more points, only because I think that you're playing Elder for not a whole ton of value on his own. It's spawning the Harpies, of course, is good value, or summoning them rather is good value. But, you know, he's not gaining any additional effects from consuming those Wolves. So that's something that, I mean, they didn't have to make Unseen Elder any different to make him viable. They just had to make consume even better, and changing Harpies to work with consume is, oh, McBeard.
It's great. Elder's good now. Like, that makes Elder, like, the fact that you can consume three beasts in one turn and get all the Harpies out in one turn, now you're not just relying on your Neckers and your Arrakis Behemoth. Behemoth, I mean, you can run consume a couple different ways. You can run a spider version with Arrakis Behemoth. You can run Vrand. You can run Selenal Harpies. The list that I'm running runs none of those cards, and Elder is really good in this deck. So it's actually interesting, because we talked about how is Elder competitive? Is he too one-dimensional? And I think that now, I think that they may not need to change him now, because I think that he might be competitive. I'm not 100% sure. It might still be early patch. It might just be that the climbing is easier and stuff like that, but it felt super dominant. I was a big fan of it. And I know we just glazed over Northern Realms, but there's a full test swarm variant that seems really good. And Henselt has a couple of, seems to have a couple of cool decks that they can build, like basically kind of swarming out with Kidwinny Siege supports and like multi-unit cards, like really, like Henselt will probably, in a long round, seems pretty strong. Full test is also very, very strong in a long round as well. Haven't seen a lot of Radovid, but I think that, you know, there's probably a place for him out there as well. I have seen zero catapults in any of my matchups. I saw one Ronvid. It seemed underwhelming. But, you know, Northern Realms has got some stuff going for it. I think it's probably viable. I played one Pro Ladder game today, and it actually was against a very good full test deck. And, you know, it was really good. Northern Realms seems okay as well.
Yeah, and I want to say, you know, talk about Northern Realms real quick, because they have the Reaver Scouts, like the original play a copy of this card from your deck card. And I want to say with this patch, two of the new cards have added that ability to monsters with Slizzard, as well as to Skellige, right?
Yeah.
Skellige is able to play the new unit, the Heimei Battle Maiden.
That's right.
Basically sort of works with the self-wounding archetype, but also summons a copy from the deck. So that's pretty cool as well to see that sort of spreading around. And the units, while being different flavor-wise and different with the archetype, you know, working with, but they still have the same functionality, and there's a little bit more homogenization coming with each patch.
You say homogenization, but the way that CD Projekt Red described it, Luigi used the word an access card. So Skellige didn't have an access card, and they didn't have a Weatherclear in a bronze unit as well. So they got both of those things. Skellige actually got two bronze cards in the Flaminica, the one that can actually clear weather and move two units to the row, which is an interesting effect. Feels like a little bit samey to the Vriad Brigade, which Scoia'tael's bronze Weatherclear unit is. But ultimately, they had Armorsmith, which was helping them with weather, but it wasn't truly, it was something that they just didn't have, a way to actually clear weather with a bronze unit. So they got that, and then the Heimei Battle Maiden. And something I learned on my stream is, if the Heimei Battle Maiden can't pull a card from the deck, it will not actually issue its ping either. So if you try to use it on a board with an unprocked Young Berserker, let's say, that transforms into a bear when it's damaged, and you don't have one in your deck to pull, she won't actually issue that damage to transform it at all. It's just basically a two strength bronze that does nothing for you. So I wonder if that's intended. I think it probably should always ping, because a deck that runs it is probably happy to take that ping. So, I mean, it's interesting either way. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think that the Skellige cards are really good. Also, Harold Houndsnout offering a really cool archetype right now. A shout out to Gulox, too, who's playing a really interesting cursed Skellige deck. It seems to be the current flavor for Skellige outside of kind of your normal discard with Bran.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing is, like, I went right to Scoia'tael first. I didn't even really try out Harold Houndsnout, but he was one of the first cards that showed up. You know, and I'm not really sure, like, what would you say is making curses work so well now, or at least as reasonably well as they are now versus last patch? Is it just Harold?
No, it's not just Harold. I think that cursed was, it was definitely lower tier. It was like probably tier 3 or 4, I think. Cursed units, of course, Young Berserker transforming into the bear, your Berserker Marauder that is buffed by, you know, the amount of cursed and damage units on the board. So you drop these guys at like 12, 13, I think, on a regular basis. But Harold Houndsnout actually offers you three cursed units. He himself is cursed, and his two, you know, sons, aka skulls in a boat, are also cursed. So that's basically three extra points on a Berserker Marauder and one card. So having a multi-body cursed unit definitely helped. The Heimei Battle Maiden also helps because, you know, cursed was a little slow, so it just allows that, you know, I love that term, an access card. I love that term that Luigi used. So being able to actually, like, being able to play it into a Young Berserker is actually very strong. You proc the bear, you get the points there, and you also summon another one, and then you can proc that one later as well. And there's probably some variants. Like, I find, strangely enough, probably because he's RNG, I'm not really sure, but Skjall, who pulls a cursed card from your deck, isn't really being played. But Harold Houndsnout has a card that can kind of facilitate that. But since Harold Houndsnout's kind of his disloyal skull that gives you the pull of a bronze cursed card from your deck. That's in your control. If your opponent destroys it on his turn or her turn, it doesn't actually have the effect because it's this new revenge keyword in which it has to occur. It's like a death wish that occurs only on the turn, your turn, not the opponent's turn who has it on the board. So I think that it definitely just got a little bit more it got a little bit more tools, a little bit more flexibility and tempo. And then, of course, you do have carryover on top of that. So, you know, Skellige has a lot of ways to do. And, of course, Restore is still pretty good, being able to play Harold Houndstown a number of times. He's kind of a casting nightmare, though. He can get you such varying levels of value that he's going to be hard to cast, I think, in the future.
Or it'll be even better to hype cast because you just never know what's going to happen and it's going to surprise you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got a little bit
I like the looks of it. Yeah, I like the looks of it. I like to finally see that the Berserkers and Young Berserkers and Berserker Marauders really... were you referring to Berserker Marauders when you were saying how good he is, Harold, when he appears, buffing by three?
Yeah, yeah. Berserker Marauder buffs itself by every cursed unit and damaged unit, so you get three cursed unit in Harold Houndsnout right away.
Yeah, I think Skjall isn't just not seeing much play. He's a silver slot in Skellige, and Skellige's super tight on silvers. And now we have the Heime Battle Maidens basically doing what Skjall would do anyway.
That's very true. That's very true.
Access card, right?
Yeah, it's true. So like Skjall being random as well is unreliable. And it means that if you play Udalric, you may summon Udalric sooner than you want to summon him. if you need Morkvarg, you can't guarantee to get Morkvarg. So there's a lot of cool cursed cards in Skellige. And Croc, I believe, runs this is a Croc on Crate deck, I think. And, for cursed, yeah, isn't it? What would you play?
Wait, Udalric's not cursed, is he?
Udalric's cursed. Yeah, he is, indeed. He's got that demon haunting him. Yeah, you didn't know?
I know he is, like, in the lore. But no, I didn't know that. He is cursed. That's right. Well, look at that. That's actually pretty good. It does help then, I guess, to have Skjall to offset the power from him. So that's cool.
It's true. I mean, there was some decks. I think the thing that was holding it back was the deck itself. But originally, you could run only Udalric and Skjall, and Skjall would always get you. Udalric, kind of like a Rainfarn, always gets you. I mean, doesn't always get you Cantarella, but you can play Cantarella from Rainfarn and kind of get that. You get that refund a little bit because Rainfarn and maybe Roach on top of that. So makes Udalric a little bit easier to play. And but I think I haven't seen him in any lists yet. And I don't know if we will see him because he is random and unreliable. But like you, Greyboxer, I actually gravitated towards Scoia'tael as well first because I really wanted to play the Mahakam Ale. And I felt like there was a spell Scoia'tael list. So I basically played this Drunken Elves deck that used Elven Mercenaries to pull out the Mahakam Ale. I was running the new card Crow's Eye on top of that, and then kind of a standard spell Scoia'tael Farseer Protector package. We did really well. It was early playing. I was running some really weird golds. I wanted to play out like the new gold card, Handmarvin's Blue Dream and Avalok the Sage, which is super RNG and not competitive, but very fun. And, I was just kind of playing a mishmash of stuff. Yorveth is buffed and changed a little bit the way he buffs elves in your hand. So, you know, considering there's a lot of cards you might want to remove in round one and you want to play Yorveth early now for removal so you can get maximum benefit in your hand buffing all the elves. It was actually really fun. It was good. I've got a really weird and hilarious video on YouTube about it, but I loved it. But there's also that dwarf deck that uses the Ale of the Ancestors on top of that. So, what version did you play, Greyboxer?
The Dwarven version with the Ale of the Ancestors and everything. That was my favorite way. Like, you know, play a dwarf, buff a dwarf was the simplest way for me to get back in with all the changes and everything and not being quite sure what I wanted to start with yet. But that was when I was playing and I did the same thing where I played the played Mahakam Ale. I did not play Crow's Eye, much to your chagrin. I still was playing the... still was playing Full Moon instead to buff everybody. And I was playing... playing Hattori, but I didn't play any hand buffs because I was using Hattori to resurrect Brewerhoog, which was a decent play, right?
Barclay Elves, you mean?
I was using him to resurrect Barclay Elves. Oh man, I'm gonna lose some cred for that. But generally, it was good value. Like I was able to win like a very very deep round one against Consume, and obviously with round two, knowing that they were going to have even more, you have to be careful against that deck. You have to try to 2-0 them because they'll beat you with carryover every time. But yeah, you get a ton of value and I don't know, like I want a better finisher for that deck. That's what we need to go into the Gwent labs and figure out.
I think that it's really cool. I wanted to try it out. I mean, maybe Mahakam Defenders might help you. It's kind of like one of the OG carryover cards. It was always kind of like a card that was a poster boy for resilience in the back in the day, and of course was very hated in the Gwent Open meta of last Gwent Open, in that it was the play a dwarf, buff a dwarf situation. So it was one of the reasons why resilience got nerfed as well, the way the boost will actually go away round to round. So there is that. But I mean, Hattori, what a great silver card for Squirtle. Squirtle has a resurrect card now, and Hattori has a lot of cards that, you know, Hattori only resurrects the stuff that's at or below his strength level. And while this does work with hand buff, there's a lot of great cards that Hattori can res at his current level of 3 to begin with. Barclay Ells is a great example that you said. I was using it in my spell Squirtle deck to resurrect Elven Mercenary so I could just play another spell, and that spell is usually pretty good. So it's, you know, you get the Elven Mercenary, Hattori, 4 points on top of the spell you'd play, plus the buffs, plus the Farseer buff, plus the Protector buff. Like, really, really good card in... I feel like... I don't know if I'd say auto-include, but he's, like, one of the strongest cards that came out in this expanded card pool.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I think especially with hand buff being so powerful as well, I'm sure you're seeing that going around quite a lot. Mm. With the Hawker supports especially being featured, and the new Sword Masters. So expect to be seeing Hattori in most of those lists, or at least I would think in most of those lists. And the thing is he is really the finisher now, right? He's like a Sigurdifa for Squirtle, and with the ability to buff him up and let him be much, much more flexible when you're resurrecting something, you know, there's other bigger cards that you can pick up and play. I mean, Moren comes to mind. I mean, you could pick up and play Yarpin if he got killed, if you have a, you know, buffed up enough. There's a couple of good cards there that I think you can really work with. I think he's great, and I think that he's probably, to be honest, second maybe to the Swordmaster as the best card they added to Squirtle.
Yeah, Squirtle got two cards. I mean, we're talking about the Mahaka Mail, which is a neutral card, and we're talking, of course, about Marauders, which were added in the last expanded card pool pack of the last season. But Hattori is really good. I mean, you don't even have to like lose tempo to buff him at any point. I mean, you could be playing Dragoons and you could get your buffs there, but even Decoy on Hattori buffs him up to 6 to get Truvial back. Like, you can do really cool stuff with Hattori, and you know, you already played Hattori to maybe get Barclay Ells back, to get an Agitator back, to get an Agitator on the board, to get, you know, another Marauder on the board, and then you Decoy Hattori and you get Truvial on the board or whatever. Like, none of this like is like, you don't slow down at any point. The Swordmasters are also really good. You can play a much more control-y hand buff version of the deck. They're basically miniature Brienne's in that they do damage based on their current power. So, you know, Brienne got changed a little bit as well. She's strictly better than she was, but somehow feels less good because the Swordmasters are like bronze versions of her. And, you know, the buff that she's applying to Dryads and ambush units, it's not super significant as well. But, you know, it's good. Like, I think that the cards that Squirtle got were just pretty darn good. Like, Hattori has got to be one of the best cards in the set, I think.
Yeah, and I think the Swordmasters really enable the hand buff archetype even better, because you used to have to dump everything into Brienne, maybe Toriviel, like you said, whereas the Swordmasters now as a bronze unit are going to be sitting in your hand, and you know, it's multiplicative strength to be able to use a you know, 6 power support to buff a 4 strength unit by 3, and then also basically buff it by 6.
Yeah,
and so you're getting 12 value already out of your support, and then the Swordmaster, you know, is going to keep growing, and it's only with one buff. So there's a few ways to make this really work, and just to provide huge solid value town bronzes for Squirtle, and mm-hmm. and they're good in any stage of the game because everything's interactable now.
Get that double dip in points, yeah, from the Swordmaster. So that's pretty good. And then finally, Nilfgaard's cards got released as well. You know, they got a silver card, Heavy Helga or Heavy Helge. I think it's Helga, right? I don't know. I'm not really sure. It's, you know, it just seems like it's kind of a nice reveal card that offers you like a pretty good kind of one-sided Stamelford's effect. Deals 1 damage to everything if the card was revealed before you played it. And, you know, it just seems like it's just you play it and you get, boom, you get a lot of value from the silver card. You're not really probably using it for removal. You know, there's probably some monster decks that it's a good matchup for. So, you know, there is that card, and, you know, reveal kind of already had. I'm not sure if the silvers were super flexible for reveal, but, you know, it's kind of like maybe a sub for Cynthia. Cynthia is kind of also just like a value card for a reveal. But then they got the Venandella lead as well. And a lot of people are worried about this card. It allows you to play Cantarella at 1 point, which is crazy good. But it's beyond that as well. You can reveal all sorts of stuff in your opponent's hand and just basically completely crush their power. Can really shut down spells, Scoia'tael. Can shut down a lot of cards that rely on, you know, playing strong buffed cards in hand. On top of the fact that you're probably running stuff like Sweers as well, which can also really hurt you. So, you know, what do you think about that Venandella Elite that everybody's talking about?
I think it's good. I think it's a really powerful card, obviously, and it's sort of enabling a really powerful archetype, a really weak archetype in reveal, and trying to bring its power up almost single-handedly, right? Because this card is a very low power, but it has the ability to make giant swings. And we're seeing this, you know, we saw it with the Swordmasters and Scoia'tael being a bronze version of Brienne. This is a bronze Sarret, where Sarret's 6 power sets something to 1. If the unit is at least 6 power, this is literally a bronze Sarret. It will set it to 1, and it will boost itself to 6, the Venandella Elite. So you have three of those in your deck, and you go ahead revealing everything in your opponent's hand and setting it all to 1 and buffing yourself in the meantime. It's the same story as the Swordmasters, where for every point you take away, you gain an extra point, where it becomes very multiplicative almost. You're getting double value for deploying, for the deploy effect. You can use it on something like your Spy Cantarella, and it, you know, everyone's yelling, it's a 21 point bronze, oh my god. But really, it in some cases it really is, but most of the time it's going to be closer to Sarret in value.
I mean, the one thing is that the Venandella Elite, that 21 point bronze thing, you don't get 21 points every time you play it. You do need to have it. You need to have Cantarella in your hand, first of all. You need to have it revealed on top of that. And also, you can only play one Venandella Elite that gets that bonus. The other two don't necessarily get that bonus. But, you know, the fact that you have three of them potentially, it means that you're going to get a lot of value out of it. And, I mean, it's good. I mean, reveal did need help. I'll say that much. And I think that, you know, the two cards that Nilfgaard got were supporting reveal. So I think it remains to be seen if it's just a little bit of, like, early patch, this is crazy, or if it's going to end up being like a hotfix issue of some kind. It didn't seem out of control. I'm still climbing. A lot of the games that I play are a little weird. You know, I've beaten a lot of reveal. I've beaten a lot of, I mean, that Consume deck beats a lot of everything, to be honest. So it felt really good to play Consume today against these decks that are really, really strong. But I mean, a card like that makes it a little bit harder to like have some fun testing stuff out, because it is pretty strong to play an 11 point bronze into a 1 point spy. It is a little strong. So, I mean, there's a lot that card can do. I think that the potential for that card is still yet to be, it may not even be completely tested yet. It may be even like people might try to find ways to break it even further than they already have. But I mean, that's, you know, that's like a really kind of quick bird's eye view at the factions. That's one more card I wanted to talk about real quick, was the Muzzle card. As far as like the strange golds like Ale of the Ancestors and Avalok the Sage and Wolfsbane and some of the cards that require like some very specific stuff, I think Muzzle is just solid straight up. Like, I think it's just, you take away like a strategic card from your opponent, you can take it early as well. And I was playing some games today where it actually felt like we were in a Muzzle meta. I was taking a card and then they were taking it back with their Muzzle.
Wow, does it work with Necrs? Does it count as a removal from the board and put another Necr on the board then?
No, and I had my Necr stolen a lot, actually. I never stole him back. Like, it's good because you have a lot of ways to access your Necrs, I think. But I think that, you know, sometimes it's worse than locking them, obviously, because you get those points back. And also, you know, that's a really important part of the strategy of Consume. So it can suck to have your Necrs stolen, but they can only steal it early on. Muzzle does have a cap of 8 points. But stealing, like, in a mirror, or at least in a monster mirror or monster matchup against monsters, it's great to steal the Erica's Behemoth, because I'm not running any. But boy, it's great to have one on the board when I start Consuming. Like, there's a lot of good stuff you can take. You can take Farseers. You can take the Mangonels from Reveal. You know, it's really like a lot of cool stuff, but it seemed like my opponents had a lot. There were a lot of Muzzles in on my opponent's side as well. It's a really popular gold card right now, because I think it's, you know, it's a good card. It's a good card. Yeah. Better than maybe people thought it was going to be.
Well, it is, but let's talk about that for just a second, because we see that it has that power limit of 8, right? Because they don't want it to be unlimited power and it be like the old Becker's Twisted Mirror or something, because in fact, it's strictly better, right? Because it would take anything, right, and move it to your side. So they had to put the power restriction on it. But in my opinion, McBeard, the power restriction is way too low. And you made a good point saying that neckers often get above 8 before you can even really steal them with muzzle or even makes it worth your while. And we look at a card like we just talked about. We talk about Venendal Elite. Imagine if you play Venendal Elites against something like Swordmasters or Brienne. And not only are you gaining whatever they were hand buffed to, you're also removing their ability to do damage when they deploy. So you're that's almost like an unlimited sort of reach as well. And the Venendal Elite is not limited by the amount of damage it can deal. And so we see a bronze card, not limited in damage, that it can ostensibly deal as much as, you know, the unit is in your hand. Whereas muzzle, we're stuck at 8, and that's a gold card. I wonder what, if any, is the reason behind the restriction on the gold and none on the bronze.
I mean, it's interesting because when you look at a card like Eskel, its muzzle's not too far away from the way Eskel works, especially when you talk about playing spies and stuff like that. Like, Eskel will remove a card on your opponent's board if it's not boosted, and Eskel himself is a 7-strength body. So you play a card, puts points on your board, you remove points from your opponent's board. Muzzle is very, very similar. Only in some very specific mirrors or very specific matchups can you really abuse the card that you took. I think Farseer is the easiest one in that it is so crucial to spell square tell strategy, and likely in most matchups you have some way of boosting stuff on your board at some point, so your Farseer is going to grow when you take it. I think that Farseer is one of the best cards you can take with muzzle, although you have a very limited time to actually do that because Farseer grows quite fast. But I think that, you know, it felt at the time when it was announced, and even now when I've played it, it doesn't feel OP. It feels balanced, but it feels balanced in the way that it's just, you know, good. It's good like how Eskel is good or how Geralt Igni is good, where when you nail it, it's really good. But when it's kind of meh, you know, you just go ahead and just take the value it's going to give you. You hit a 6-strength card, it's 12-point swing, you know, it's gold card for 12 points. It's, you know, it's kind of meh when you compare it to some of the silvers and bronzes, but, you know, you get a good card and it's quite good, and it doesn't seem too meta dependent because there's going to usually be a target for it, even at 8.
Yeah, I agree. I just, you know, I was just making the comparison between the two, that one having a power limit and being a gold, and then the you know, the people are, you know, they got their pitchforks in the air about the Venendal, you know, their spears and pitchforks, and it may be rightly so, but I think we need to wait and see on this one. We don't need to have any knee-jerk reactions right away.
Yeah, so I strongly encourage all of you to make some new decks, crack open those kegs, get some new cards, play on the ladder, experiment, because climbing is fairly easy early on. You don't have to, like, try too hard. You don't lose a lot of points when you lose. You gain a lot of points when you win on the ranked ladder. So, you know, try to have as much fun as possible, because this is the best time to be playing Gwent in the first week of a patch before things really settle down and, like, the really, really strong stuff and is out there and the meta gets established. So you get to play a lot of fun stuff. Play some more Northern Realms, guys. I think it needs a little bit more representation. It's probably better than people might think it is. And, you know, it's out there, guys. It's good. It's a good time to play Gwent, of course. It's always invigorating to get new cards, to have the season reset. And one more thing that's worth talking about. While the pro season will still remain at 2 months, the ranked play season for non-pros is now going to be 1 month season moving forward. So moving into 2018, there will now be 12 ranked seasons and 6 pro seasons, from what I understand, which means more borders and avatars and maybe easier ways to get those as far as, like, time commitment. So I don't know, Gray Boxer, this might be, I don't know how you feel about this. I think that a lot of people were feeling like 2 months might be a little bit too long for the ranked play season. I think it's fine for the pros because taking peak MMR, it gives you a lot of time to really, like, establish that foothold. But I think for the ranked play, I think it's actually a good decision that they made.
Yeah, I just wonder, because I know based on, you know, information and belief, that we didn't have as many Grandmasters this season as we did in the first season of the, it's really hard to say, like, what season 0, season 1, season 2, like, whatever season we just had, season 2, I'll call it. Season 2 probably had less Grandmasters than season 1, considering a lot of those Grandmasters were obviously playing the pro ladder, didn't make Grandmaster again. The grind hasn't changed, though. They've just made it a month shorter, and I wonder if that's good for players who can't play very much, because it'll be even harder to grind to 4,500. So I don't think it helps the casual player who wants to get Grandmaster for those rewards. I actually think it's bad for them, because you can't play a little bit every day and make it in a month. You're not going to make it, period. 4,500 is way too hard to achieve, even in 2 months. And even though the meta settles and gets kind of bland and boring, and you know, you just want those rewards, they do take time to grind to. And unless they change the MMR to get to Grandmaster, a lot of less and less are going to make it.
I think they will. I think they have to reduce it a little bit if they're going to cut the time to get those rewards in half. I feel like they're probably going to have to do that. I think that I may have missed the official statement about this, if it was on the dev stream or what. Obviously, I've read about it and I've heard about it, and I've seen like some of the stuff that Reth has said on streams as well. But I think that they would probably have to reduce it a little bit. 4,500 is, it does take some time to get there, and especially with the MMR gains when you get higher up, and the competitive nature of it as well. Like, there's a bottleneck at 4K. Usually, you know, 4,250 is a pretty decent achievement for most people. I actually have not gotten rank 20. I'll be completely honest about that. I'm going to change that this season. Not only do I want those Aridin borders, but I think it's important for me as a caster to be a top ranked player. And I think that I can, you know, I kind of goof off a little bit. I gravitate away from like the really, really powerful OP decks, because I do want to try to have fun a lot of the time. And sometimes grinding specific decks is not always the case, but winning is fun too. So I'm probably going to have to just bite the bullet and channel the little spike inside of me, which is, you know, a little bit smaller than maybe most people, and just play some OP stuff, you know, get playing some really, really strong stuff. And I'll try to get Grandmaster myself while we still have the 2 month season. But it remains to be seen what that threshold will be in 2018. But there's going to be a lot of new stuff in 2018. So, you know, there could be all sorts of different rewards for new game modes. Who knows what's coming? For now, we know that we have a 2 month season with Aridin borders. And this is, I would say this is season 3, season 2 being the Squirtle borders. Sorry, season 2 being the Dragon borders, season 1 being the Squirtle borders, and season 0 being closed beta season, which I do have a border, at least for that season. At least I have one border, and you have one as well, Great Boxer. So that's, you know, between the two of us, you know, we're okay, right? We're doing okay.
Yeah, you know what? I think that we're amongst good folk here in, you know, season two. It's really hard to keep these straight. The Dragon season, I think a lot of people are getting stopped, you know, around the 4,250 mark, and even hitting 4.4K was hard for a lot of our friends who are really some of the best players. And, you know, even having obviously the top talent playing on the pro ladder quite a lot, doesn't make the climb any easier, because what really hurts the climb to Grandmaster is the negative K factor that you get when you lose, right? Is you have to win almost 65 or 70% above 4,300 to get to Grandmaster.
I mean, I think that it's okay that it's hard to get it. I think it should be hard to get it. Grandmaster mm-hmm. isn't a title that I want to lose value, for sure. But I do agree with you that if they're going to make the season shorter, then they probably need to lower the threshold, probably. But, I mean, it is ultimately up to them. I think it's okay to make it prestigious. I think that the best players deserve that that distinction. And I think that, you know, it's important to know that there are a lot of players that are pretty good that don't have that title yet. So I think it's fine, ultimately. And, you know, it remains to be seen kind of how the season is going to go. We're just getting started, folks. It's just 2 days into the season at this point. So hope you're all having good luck so far, and I hope for sure you're having fun. Hope you enjoyed the single player event as well. But now we have a treat for you on the podcast. I was able to sit down with the casting team as well as the host, Ash Cosplay. So I was able to sit down with Merchant, Mogwai, Panda, and Ash to do a little kind of, you know, we sat on the interview couch at Life Coaches. Perhaps you've seen, you know, Ash did her interviews, and I also did some interviews as well on the casting couch, you know, that famous couch that Swim was lying down on in that legendary photo. So we all sat down on the couch and chatted about, you know, our feelings on this is a bit more of a macro discussion on Gwent. We're talking, and I took that. That's actually exactly what Ash calls it, a macro discussion, because we're not talking about Gwent as a game as much as we're talking about the events that are being held, how we feel about these events, how we approach casting, you know, how we look at you know, what we like, what we think is going to be happening in the future. It was a great conversation, and I really want to thank all of these people for their time. And, you know, we have a good chat here, so let's cut into that right now. This is Merchant, Ash, Mogwai, and Panda joining me for a Cast Around Table, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
Hi everybody. I'm sitting here with well, we're kind of milling around the room here, but all of the casters slash hosts have been kind enough to hang out with me and talk about the casting experience kind of from then to now, because I feel like, you know, it's a good retrospective time, as Gwent's been out for a year now. And you know, Greyboxer and I talked about that on the last podcast, but getting a chance to talk to these guys is going to be really good, because we've been now, Mogwai, you're right next to me right now. This is our fifth event that we've cast together. Now we've done Challenger, Open, Gwent together. We cast a little bit for that, Gwent Slam number one, and now Gwent Slam number two. So, you know, you've had a little bit of casting experience with Duelist before this, but now kind of this is kind of like our big stage debut, I guess, for all of us, I would say. So Merchant, of course, is with us as well. Panda will be joining us, and Ash is here as well. And so, I mean, I want to start talking with you, like, How do you feel about these events? Like, have they been organized? Like, the kind of the dynamic, the casting kind of matchups, and just generally, sort of like, what's the experience been like? You can start with Challenger and kind of go from there, because that's kind of how the journey has started for us.
Yeah, well, it technically started in January for us. It started in January. Like, remember when we were offered the casting position, and from that point onwards, like, our group has been growing a little bit, and I'm really happy with, like, the group we have now. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to actually, like, really mix it up, cast with, you know, Merch and Panda, and, of course, you.
Yeah.
And it's been great, man. Like, production is always very impressive, and this whole, it's just, it's a really fun gig. You get to travel. It's, there's nothing bad about it, really.
It's good. Merchant, how have you felt? Because you've joined us now since Gwent Open at this point.
Yeah, I joined a little bit into it, and now, of course, we've got Panda joining us too, which is really cool. Yeah, it's crazy. It's cool to see everything, like, scale up, and now that things are, you know, getting bigger in the competitive side of things, it's really cool to see, like, the variety of events, because we have everything from, like, online cups, like, Gwent will open and stuff. We have, like, the very sort of serious business Gwent opens and challenges, and then you get, like, crazy events like this, like Gwent Slam, so... Yeah, no, it's just so cool to be, like, involved in such an awesome range of competitive activities.
Yeah. Talking about scale, like, because there are, like, the smaller community-run stuff, too. Like, the Wellmen do their thing as well, so it's, like, I think that the audience has seen kind of, like, the small-time stuff, even, like, right back from the very, very beginning, where, like, I tried to do, like, a weird kind of, like, Skype stream with some people, and then all the way up now to, like, the larger production stuff of CD Projekt Red and Gwent Slam, the production's really good as well. As far as, like, from a casting standpoint, how have you felt about, last Gwent Slam, we didn't have deck lists in front of us, and that was kind of an experiment in kind of, like, the casting experience and making things a bit more exciting. But then, of course, the lack of information was difficult at times. Now we're thinking about maybe getting more information on the screen and perhaps having, some more analysis and perhaps... just better ways for us to, like, keep track of things. Like, what do you think could be improved to maybe make casting a little bit more streamlined? Because Gwent's a very complex game. A lot of information is on the screen at any given time. I don't know, anybody can hit this one.
Yeah, I think this is, like, stuff that really point that off. Start out by saying I'm very glad that I wasn't casting at the one where you didn't have deck lists. That would be pretty fun. But I think that this is something that really calls out for the spectate mode in the game. Because naturally, once you build that, it's very easy to have a setting where you can see decks and stuff like that.
Mouse over and stuff.
Yeah, so you can spectate, see what's remaining in people's decks. We need actual full integration. Like, there's the sort of the duality, isn't there, of, like, the competitive and, like, the setting and what's going on and everything being super, super supportive of Gwent. But then it's lacking in-game integrations. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it comes down to the development side, where we need actual support for stuff like this. We need replays, spectate mode, maybe even in-game tournaments. That needs to come into the game for the long-term health of the competitive scene and just to allow grassroots organizations especially to do much better productions.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And it's, like, kind of like, and I think we're all streamers here as well. We all know, like, sometimes there are there are some challenges, and I actually pass this one to Asher. There's some challenges sometimes when it comes to playing the game. I mean, Gwent's obviously complex enough, it requires like a high level of skill, but when it comes to streaming, there are minor distractions that can sometimes hinder sort of like maybe hand reading, maybe because you're like interacting with your chat, or you're looking at something on a second screen where, well, from a casting standpoint, you need to be paying very close attention. Sometimes some information can be missed, but as far as like playing the game in front of a camera or being kind of a personality that is, because as streamers, we kind of cast our own games at all times. So like, what do you think, like the similarities between streaming and casting, like maybe there's a conversation to be had. I don't know how to approach that. I feel like I kind of butchered this.
I think it's an interesting question. Like, how do you bridge the gap between streaming and casting? Because they're so similar yet so different at the same time. So I think it's an interesting thing to talk about.
It's also weird to watch real streaming.
Yeah, how do you approach streaming, Ash? We're talking to Ash as well here, as Ash has been a host and been involved in these events, starting with the last Gwent Slam and CD Projekt Red Round of Gwent as well. Real superstar, thanks for being on the podcast. But how do you approach streaming and actually kind of casting your own games?
Well, my stream is quite different, I would say, to lots of other streamers. With mine, it's very much about high levels of interactivity, mm-hmm. And, you know, really kind of talking to chat and fostering a community there. And Gwent is almost secondary, I would say. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still try to maintain a certain level of you know, standard in my Gwent play, but it oftentimes falls by the wayside, you know, at the expense of, you know, my gameplay suffers because I enjoy talking to people, but I think that's why people come and watch me, to be honest. There are lots of, you know, fantastic Gwent players out there. So for me, it's really just more about getting to know everybody in the community. And I think that for me is one of my strong points, I would say. I'm quite a sociable person, especially within the Gwent community. So I feel like that is probably why I've been, you know, invited to host events like this, as opposed to being a caster, because I don't know, I feel like my strong points lie in engagement, interactivity, things like that, kind of as opposed to high-level gameplay, which lots of people are very much more qualified to do than me.
I mean, it's interesting you're talking about, like maybe varying skill levels, but we're all still involved in these events. I mean, among the four of us, like it is, there's disparities in skill levels. I mean, I'm coming from a point where I'm a little bit on the lower side. We have Mogwai, who's actually won the original Gwent together as well. And, you know, we've all had our high points in various metas, but I think since we're all streamers, we all try to partake in events and do content. We're all entertainers, right? Yeah. So there is, I want to talk about maybe like the entertainment aspect of casting and actually bringing that excitement to a game where, you know, there's a lot of information. Sometimes you can do the math, you can be watching, you can say, oh, that play is obvious or this is obvious. Not that it's always obvious. I think a lot of people called some things wrong in the chat yesterday about who is going to win. Especially, I think it was like maybe the Freddy Babes.
Freddy Babes has lost.
Yeah, Freddy Babes lost. Freddy Babes lost. Oh, he won. Yeah.
The entire chat was like, he lost.
One can watch out.
But I really like the subject. I really it's very interesting for me because even though I've been streaming for quite a time, I still consider myself mainly a YouTuber. And the transition wasn't as easy as first because I'm surprisingly good at talking with myself. So I do use that to my advantage. But I think I'm actually like, I think my strengths and my weaknesses are actually, for example, Ash's strengths. I really struggle keeping up with the chat because I am a person who just lacks the ability to multitask efficiently. I just don't, you know, so I get really into the game and I just lose track of, you know, what people are saying and such. I'm narrating what I'm doing, right? Like as if I were recording a video, but it's something I'm working on a lot. Like it's not easy, you know, like it's definitely better. As a caster, it doesn't really bother me because I don't have to keep track of the chat or anything, right? But as a streamer, it's something that I'm definitely working on myself. Like I want to, you know, provide good gameplay, but I also, the most important thing is to entertain people. And, you know, I feel like I could personally like work on interacting more and such. Yeah. Mm. But it's important to like know, you know, what you're good at, what you're bad at, and just work on that stuff, basically.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a place in the community for all different types of streamers and casters. I know some people, for example, Life Coach and JJ, they'll watch them for their gameplay. They're entertaining as well, but you know, it's predominantly for their really high level gameplay. And the sound effects, of course, help. But I think, yeah, there's a place for all of us, and we all foster communities who want to see the type of thing that we do. I think that just happens naturally. And we can always, you know, work to improve, but we're going to attract people who like what we do already.
Mm. Merchant, what's your approach to casting as opposed to the way you stream or create YouTube content? Do you take a different approach to it, like as opposed to?
I think. I don't know. I say I approach it in a more similar way to what I do with my YouTube. So my YouTube content tends to be a lot more structured. On stream, I'm actually quite similar to Ash on stream. Like, I have a very social stream. A lot of it's about, like, you know, the jokes and hanging out and stuff. And I think that I do my YouTube in a more constructed manner, and that's similar to how I approach casting. Like, I actually will, like, research the players and stuff, which is something that, like, I'd never do on stream. You know, on stream we mess around. But yeah, I think it's about getting that right balance between, you've got to, like, get it as structured as possible, but you also still have to enjoy it. So you've got to keep it fun, you've got to keep yourself engaged with it. In terms of actually presenting, it's a funny one. I mean, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people think it would be similar to talking live on stream, but it's not, because when you're streaming, you're talking to your chat, you can see whatever he's saying. When you're casting, you're not. Like, you're really just talking to the other caster about the game, you know, explaining it like a YouTube video, like talking to yourself. So I almost think that YouTube is better practice for casting than streaming, if I'm honest.
I think like around the time when Merchant joined the casting team, and now Panda's also joining the casting team as well, I've seen a lot of comments on Reddit and other platforms about roles that the casters take. When you look at maybe other games, like, there might be like a guy who, like, who's there for like the big hype plays, like, oh, like this huge play, and then after that there might be like a little bit more of an analysis, like when maybe there's like less stuff happening. Gwent's not really like that. I think that the approach for Gwent is a little bit different. Like, for me personally, I try to take a more bird's eye view of matchups and try to maybe put myself in the player's head as to like what decision they might be thinking of next, maybe to the detriment of my view on maybe like the long term of the round. Like, should the round go all the way until the end? How deep is the round going to go? When is the best pass going to be? So, I mean, I don't know. I actually never asked all of you about this kind of thing, but how do you feel about defined caster roles as opposed to casting just personalities and different approaches?
I think casting roles are actually quite important. I think, like, the quicker that you can identify your role in a casting setup, the better. There's a couple of terms from professional wrestling, because I'm really cool, which is a color caster and a play-by-play caster. So the color caster is providing background, you know, providing like overviews and whatnot, and then the play-by-play is going into the technical detail of each move. And so to take an example, say like myself and Panda, like, I sort of ask the overarching questions, I talk about the players, I talk about the game in general, and then I throw it to Panda to explain in depth, you know, the performance of each player at the moment in time. So I feel like when you can get those established roles, and like yourself and Mogwai, like, you know, yeah, Mogwai is going to shout the plays and you're going to talk about the matchups and you're going to talk about the overviews and whatnot. Obviously it gets mixed and stuff, but it's good to have generally those set roles just to initiate the conversation. But I think they're actually super important and accurate as well. I think that you can look at every major commentator in esports and point out what type of caster they are if you know the roles properly.
I never like really think too much about it, like what my style is or what I will be labeled as. But I just try to. It's important to also, like, something that I've liked, like, casting with Dane, and I think we mixed well, is because we contrast each other. And it, when I'm like overly, you know, loud or whatever, he tones me down.
Mogwai-esque.
And I think that them is what made the challenger really special. It's like, you know, I was. So at certain points, I was so excited to be there that I reached the levels of being obnoxious, you know, like, all over the place. But he chilled me down, but we both got very excited at the same time, like, because even though technically he's toning me down, at the same time, when the last game happened, we were all, like, banging the table, like, both of us were taking now the role, you know. So yeah. It's like you said, it is, you can't label people, but it's also a bit of a mix as well, I think. But, yeah, I just talk.
Ash, recently we've now had a hosting role given, and you have been filling that role wonderfully. How do you feel? What do you feel about the importance of a host role, and being able to bring in interviews and get to know the players and get to know their stories? And how do you approach, like, kind of that aspect? Because we've been doing interviews as well as kind of leading in and having transitions, not a lot of downtime, trying to make these events a bit more engaging at all times. Like, when it comes to actually interviewing players and doing these transitions, like, what's your approach to that? And how have you been liking it?
So it's interesting you say, like, what's my approach, because for me it's just quite a natural thing. I just speak to them as if I was speaking to anyone else, as almost, you know, just a friend or someone they've just met. So for me, it's a genuine like curiosity whenever I'm interviewing people. Like, I want to know where they're from, how they got into the game, you know, if they came from any other games. Like, they're all just genuine questions. It's quite interesting because I've had a number of roles hosting at events, smaller events, which haven't been streamed or anything. Mm-hmm. So I was at Jesse Cox, who's a YouTuber. He has a convention up in Telford called CoxCon. And I was hosting a tournament there live on stage and had no prior preparation or anything and kind of got thrown into hosting for an hour and casting. So that was quite interesting. It was all just very spur of the moment type of stuff. But I think I did it pretty well. So I wouldn't say I have a rigid approach. It's not anything I've ever tried to hone. It's just a genuine, you know, want to talk and to learn more about people, which is, yeah, I find it really interesting. So when we're doing the pre-game interviews with all the guys here, it's just out of a want to know more about them other than what we just see on the ladder or on streams or things like that. So I just want to know, you know, who is the person behind the name that we all meet. So yeah, it's coming from a place of genuine curiosity. And I feel like that got a really good response in the first Gwent Slam. People enjoyed seeing more about who the players actually are. So yeah, I hope we can continue doing that because I want to kind of uncover, you know, the player behind the name.
Yeah. I guess yeah, I was using the word approach. I guess I didn't want to maybe insinuate that we kind of construct our persona specifically, because there is a genuine aspect to the way you talk to people, and that's really good for the interviews. Panda, come here. Come over here. Panda actually just joined us here. Panda, you just joined us on the casting team, and we're going to see, we've seen a little bit of you from Gwent together. That's kind of how you got a chance to actually sit down at the desk and chat and start casting, and now you have been part of all of these Vienna events, either by happenstance of being able to actually qualify and participate, and then also, you know, later on being available for the casting. Your road has been very sort of I originally, like, you were actually filling a role in Gwent Together, and it just kind of all fell together for you. How has your journey been as far as casting is concerned?
Well, it's been interesting. I didn't really think about doing this or, you know, getting into this at all, ever. It just kind of happened in Gwent Together. They asked me if I wanted to do it. It seemed like fun. So I joined in, and there was, in general, a pretty good response on social media and Reddit and stuff. So I thought about it, maybe, like, doing it, like, for real. And then obviously, Raffle and Brizza also said they liked it a lot, so it seemed like a good chance to try and, you know, give it a go, and here we are.
What's your view on being a competitor as opposed to being a caster? Because it seems like we can't have it all. Some of us, I know Mogwai, you run Gwent Together, and you've had, you know, you have a real
banned
because you're too good. But there's like a competitive drive, and I mean, some have a higher drive than more, and some have the skill to get you like get a little bit higher. But once you kind of commit to the casting role, as far as like a competitive future, it's you're kind of locked in one way or another. Yeah. What's Panda? What's your view on it as well as being involved in a lot of tournaments so far and actually being able to qualify and get here? And I'll pass it to Mogwai after that as being someone who has won the Gwent Together as well.
It sucks, to be honest. even if I couldn't go like to the actual opens and the challengers, that obviously I can't, you know, do that. But I would still like to do like qualifiers and stuff, because that's something I could stream and still a really fun experience, like the Gwent Slam qualifiers. And I couldn't do that this time around, so I missed it a lot. And it was a tough decision having to decide between competing, which is a more glory-filled but also riskier path, and if you want to, you know, stick to Gwent and, you know, maybe make a living out of Gwent in some way or another. And casting seemed like the more responsible choice and maybe the more like safe, I guess, choice, where it doesn't depend so much on luck, and maybe like you're, even if you're a good player, you can have a bad run in a qualifier or, you know, not be top 10 in the pro ladder, because there's a lot of competition, obviously. And then you just can't go to tournaments, and then it kind of sucks. So
yeah,
it was a tough decision, but I think I made the right one. Hopefully time will tell, but we'll see.
Well, it's good to have you on the team. So I think you made the right one as well. Mogwai, what's your opinion on this one?
No, I mean, I agree with him. I'll start by saying that it kind of sucks. But really, as a competitor, you always have that drive in you to like do it again. And when I'm, you know, visiting here, I see people like Game King or Metranos, people who've competed multiple times. I kind of get a little bit jealous, to be fair. But I don't really have much of a right to be jealous. I think I'm very fortunate. I think we're all pretty fortunate with our position as a caster. And it's really, yes, you miss competing, but actually commentating games and being able to be a part of the scene and getting to travel, like, I wouldn't trade it for anything personally. Like, yeah, I have to sacrifice that, but I'm ultimately willing to do it.
Yeah. Does anybody else have any, I guess, maybe some closing remarks on the casting experience, the way events are being held, the way events are being run, or any of these, like, maybe suggestions or ideas? Because I think a lot of people listen to this stuff, and I think that a lot of people have opinions on kind of like us as casters and the events as they've been run, the production and stuff like that. I just want to pass the phone. I'll pass the phone. Very candid. We're recording this on my iPhone. Pass the phone around and just maybe just get a few last remarks about kind of our general opinions about the events.
So, yeah, I definitely have some thoughts on this. I was going to mention it earlier, but you can already see the difference in the production quality between the first and second Gwent Slam. You know, bringing on a whole another group of casters as well. And the whole actual, like, technical setup has been completely overhauled. Like, the amount that these guys are able to, you know, the work that they put in behind the scenes and how much they're willing to do just to have a, you know, top quality production is quite incredible. I think that's like a testament to them and how much they want the scene to do well. I think we can also definitely see that CD Projekt are also, you know, heavily invested in this whole esports thing, in addition to like the community aspect around that, bringing on more casters, doing these Round of Gwent episodes, mm-hmm. things like that. So I think that whilst the game is still growing in its, you know, core mechanics, we're also seeing, you know, growth around that on the fringes and in the community and streaming online and in tournament settings. So I feel like it's going to be very interesting to see where this whole thing ends up in about a year, because we're already seeing, you know, quite a lot of changes happening, mm-hmm. and there's still so much to come. So probably, you know, over the next few months, I imagine that the game is going to be doing pretty well for itself, mm-hmm. With the upcoming tournaments and things like that. So I'm very excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, and in a year we'll be at the World Championships. We'll be getting ready for that as well.
Yeah, I pretty much concur with all of that. I think that's all very accurate. I'd say, like, the future of, like, the competitive side, like I mentioned previously, it does rely a little bit on some, like, in-game integration that would be really healthy. But, yeah, like, I absolutely love the Gwent tournaments so far. Like, I enjoyed all of them. But the only thing that I would say about the tournaments is I just really want a tournament with more than 8 people.
Yeah, but like, the time it takes to get through these matches.
2-day event.
We're talking about this, yeah, like maybe like having non-featured matches.
Yeah, you'd have to have non-featured matches, yeah. But like, that's fine. Or you have a double stream, mm-hmm. 2 pairs of casters handling that.
Yeah, that sounds crazy.
But yeah, that's what other games do, right? Like, yeah, I would just love to see like a 32-player tournament. That'd be awesome.
In Australia.
so Petrify can get. I want it in the geographical location that is the furthest away from Melbourne, Australia. It's probably going to be like in the middle of Alaska or something, but we'll see.
Yukon, a very popular province. Perhaps it's a great venue, I think.
But yeah, I think everything's going great. I just can't wait to see what happens, really. I want to scale up, get some support. It's going to be awesome. Yeah.
Yukon's a territory, actually. Sorry, don't correct me.
I'm just basically going to give a shout out to the production team, because I think they work really hard, and I don't know, they're really cool people. Even Marty Mazing, even though I stole his Amazon sweater, we're still friends.
That's an inside baseball.
But it's great. Like, they put a lot of work, and it's cool to see like them progressing as well, like improving the graphics and everything. And it's cool to see like people who are not like the official CDPR actually doing all this work for the game. And I hope that this is the first or the third of many.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Also, to bounce off of what Ash said before, I think not only is Gwent growing as a game in terms of, you know, the content it has, the cards, etc., but also I think they're learning how to make it all better and better in terms of like the events, the production, the way they run things, the way the rules are set up, the qualifiers, etc. And we can see like in the votes for like the qualifiers with the pro ladder, having 200 people, they're asking the community, etc. And I think with time, that's going to grow like as the game grows. And yeah, I think just everything's going to get better and better as, you know, it gets more streamlined, and even like the casting team and the production in general, and the way, you know, interviews are run, or, you know, pretty much all the aspects of Gwent that aren't Gwent, I think are going to get a lot better throughout the next year and the next few events. So I think it's just going to be a learning experience for everyone, pretty much.
Well said, all of you. Thanks so much for joining me, Ash, Merchant, Mogwai, and Panda. This has been a great little casters roundtable. As always, just I want to say a huge thank you for helping me make some great content. I hope lots of you enjoyed this look. As what's that?
Just kidding.
Hope you enjoyed this look at like kind of our view on the events. And if you have any feedback on the events, of course, we always want to hear about it. CommanderZonePodcast@gmail.com. Let us know. And yeah, thanks, everybody. We'll
All right, thanks once again to the casting and hosting team of Ash, Mogwai, Panda, and Merchant. Hope you enjoyed that little non-gameplay section of Gwent. For those of you interested in the competitive scene in future events, I hope you enjoyed some of the insights from these players and casters. I definitely enjoyed talking to them. Once again, my friends, we are supported at Commander's Horn by our commandos.
Commandos!
Our patrons at patreon.com/commandershorn. Thanks so much for supporting our content, keeping the podcast ad-free, keeping the mics on and the lights on. We have a great email that is very fitting for this Gray Boxer. This is not a plant. This is a real email that we had, and I thought it would be great to read it, not to ambush you with some feelings, but you know, it's really fitting here. An email from Ethan. His email reads: Hi from Northern Ireland. I recently found your podcast and I was immediately overwhelmed by the sheer chemistry both of you have. I have started from episode 1 and it's so helpful with the deck strategies for my Gwent decks. Keep up the good work. I'd just like to say, Ethan, starting from episode 1 fills me with a little bit of... I imagine that sounds very strange, especially considering the state of Gwent. A lot of the stuff that we talk about, you can kind of get that history of Gwent from start to finish. All of our podcasts are available at commandershorn.com. But I think it's really great that you would write and you would say that, as I am going to miss the chemistry from Gray Boxer and I. And Gray Boxer, how did you feel when you read this email?
No, I mean, if it felt like it was going to be permanent, I'd probably be genuinely choked up. But I don't feel like this is goodbye. This is see you soon instead of goodbye. And so this email from Ethan's really great, and the fact that he went back and listened to episode 1, good on you, man. And I apologize for my microphone for the first 6 episodes or whatever it was dreadful, and I finally stepped my game up and got the matching McBeard mic.
And Gray Boxer, of course, you joined on episode 4, and we have cast a glorious 54 episodes together over a year. And it's been a pleasure to get to know you. Of course, this is not goodbye. This is see you later, of course. See you soon, probably more like. And, you know, it's been great. It's been just fantastic. And, you know, for the future, you will be missed, of course. And, you know, from the very first moment that I spoke to you on Skype, when you wrote me and you said, you know, you had some good ideas, I didn't know what to expect. But, you know, you said you were a big baseball fan, and I was already kind of like down with that because I am also a big baseball fan. And, you know, basically the relationship grew from there. We played Kill the Servers. We had a great time. We both were streaming, and, you know, it just turned out to be just a really great partnership and almost a borderline happenstance. I was looking for a co-host, but I didn't think I would find a close friend that I found. So, you know, at the risk of getting choked up, I'm just going to say thanks so much for being on the podcast for so long. And we'll talk really soon. Of course, we're going to keep talking, obviously.
Oh, for sure. And speaking of baseball, by the way, the World Series is on as we record this at nearly midnight. But Astros have got a nice lead. And listen, man, it's been real and it's been great. I said last episode even that I couldn't be more proud of what you've taken and what you've turned it into. You've taken a small idea and a microphone on a kitchen counter with a laptop and turned it into what seems to be a very, I don't know, for me, it would be an amazing career to embark upon, to set forth and become a very professional and extremely talented caster. And I said last week that was probably what I'm most proud of you of, is how you've become so great at being a sportscaster. Esports, but, you know, sort of the same thing. But, it's really hard to kind of congeal it all into a feeling, but I feel sort of hopeful, right? That things will turn around and I won't be so nailed down with time very soon. And everybody knows how passionate I am about The Witcher, about Gwent, about the Commandos, and about McBeard. So, I mean, come on. Am I really going to be gone for long?
Gray Box, you're killing me, man. The feels. Well, I just want to say that, you know, much like all of the commandos and everybody that hangs out, your support is one of the things that is kind of defined. I don't think I would be anywhere without the support of you, and especially you, as you've been on this podcast for so long and kind of committed your time to help this this content be great. And it's basically, it's on me to continue to make sure that it is great. And I'll do that. I will do that for sure. And I think that this is a good spot to wrap it up. And we'll wrap it up here. I just want to say once again, you can find us on Twitter at Commander's Horn, and you can email us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. Gray Boxer, as you just said, you are slammed for time, and I'm sure that there's not going to be a lot of opportunities to catch you online, but I imagine you'll still be tweeting and you'll still be talking when you can. So let us know what you will be up to and where you can be found.
Yeah, you can still find me on Twitter at GrayBoxerGwent. You can find me as GrayBoxer on YouTube to find some old episodes of, Gwent folktales and some stream highlights. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/GrayBoxer. Can't guarantee I'm going to have very many streams up in the next couple of months, but yeah, check it out. Hit me with a follow so you can see when I go live.
And I can be found at McBeardCH on Twitter, McBearded on Twitch, and C/McBeard in the YouTube address on YouTube. And I think that's pretty good. We're going to wrap it up here. Once again, thanks everybody for joining us today.
Until next time, this is Gray Boxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck
on the path.